I swear food vans have gone from around there. I swear there's less than there used
But there's
to
more
be.
Booze vans. So
well, that's yeah, what, that's
what
go.
It depends what you're looking for, doesn't it, Wim? I mean, obviously, me and John are looking for the booze vans, so you're looking for the food.
Obviously. Unprofessional joke of a waistline that I've got and all that jazz. After the mania that was the Tyler Sten Podcast episode 100, we are back down to earth and at home in our Tyler Sten Podcast studios. But on the bright side, we do have two wins in the draw to talk about as Yapstans Reading progress smoothly. We're going to ask the key question though, is this a blip, a positive blip, or is this as good as it's going to get, or can we go even better? We'll have lots to discuss on this episode 101 of the Tyler Sten Podcast, including lots to come in the mailbag, and why I'm riled up at Hal Ross and Crew for another week in a feature that I'm sure will almost become a weekly part of this programming. I just can't let him go. But anyway, I'll do my best. And to join me through this odyssey on episode 101 is the original trio of myself and Mr. Johnny Williams. Johnny, hello.
It's like we're restarting from episode one, isn't it? We should just call this 1.1 rather than 101. Just reset to the start.
Well, hopefully it won't end up in room 101.
No. That could have been a feature for this week's show, couldn't it?
What we would put in room, well, I think
what part of Reading Football Club would you put in room 101?
I think I can link that back to the Hal Robson Canoe thing that I'll come on to later.
It's a bit late for that one, I think.
Yeah. Indeed, and that other voice you've just heard is Mr. Alan West, as well as Westy. Westy, welcome back.
Hello, good to be back. I was thinking though, if you're going to do a feature on Hal Robson Canoe, we could call it What the Hal. Good. No,
it's a shame we didn't do that in the three seasons he was at the club. We
After he secured his move to West Bromwich Albion.
Hey,
I like it. I like it. Keep that. That's about as good as this show's going to get. But have Reading got as good as they're going to get? They are on a hot streak, 5 unbeaten. They've gone and won at High Flying Barnsley at the weekend, and we'll dive into that as well as a couple of other home games in the recap.
View from the Tarhurst end, recapping this week's Championship action.
So as mentioned, it's been a pretty good week to be a Reading fan, really. They've beaten Ipswich live on the telly box, 2-1. Followed up with a, not the most entertaining, but a still solid 0-0 draw against a good Birmingham side. And they've then gone up to Barnsley, one of the form teams in the division, and picked up a 2-1 win. Johnny, I'm going to start with you, and I'm just going to get this question out in the open straight away. Is this as good as it's going to get for Reading, or do you think there's something left in the tank?
Well, this is the great mystery, isn't it? And this is why we're going to keep following this team. It's certainly encouraging that we've been getting results on the board. I think that's, what is it, the first what time we've won twice in a row away from home in 2 years or so? Or I think last season we only won away from home twice, possibly, and we've already done that twice already this season. So you can see that we're developing on that side of things. And overall, things seem to be going in the right direction. I mean, I don't think any of us predicted a positive result away at Barnsley, such were the terror form that they were on. And even against Ipswich, I mean, we beat them 5-1 last year, but I don't think anyone quite thought, you know, certainly we'd get a repeat of that performance. But Yapstam seems to be putting together the performances and getting the results so far. I mean, it is still quite tight, and, you know, we've not really, I don't think we've still got a negative goal difference, despite us being, what, seventh in the table at this early stage. So you can say that we're not absolutely hammering teams, but at the same time, we're looking comfortable, and my fears that we'd get relegated rather than before we got promoted are certainly being allayed at this early stage.
So safe to say you're looking up rather than down right now.
Yeah, yeah.
Westy, what about you? You've watched this team for even longer than the two of us, so how's that jaded Reading fandom holding you up through these early weeks?
No, it's been good. I've enjoyed it. I said I've really, over the last two or three seasons, I've lost enthusiasm for going to watch it, and although I did last time I was on there, I did speak about how long would Reading fans tolerate a Reading team keeping the ball for any length of time, and I said it wouldn't be long before some elephants started booing, and that's proved to be true. Again, my enthusiasm's back, but I see them moving forward. I think it's still early days for this system. It's still early days for what they're playing. I think sometimes they lack a bit of a endeavour up front where they just can play that final ball and score goals. But I think that'll come. And I just think at the moment, for a team that's been newly put together, playing a different style, to be picking up wins that they haven't done over the last two seasons, especially away from home. And in many ways, it's set up, the way they play is set up to play away from home because it's frustrating. And that's why a lot of the home fans have been frustrated with it, because teams have been sitting in for years when they come and play Reading. And now they're saying to them, well, try and play around us. and they're pressuring them on the ball. But away from home, teams have to come at you. So Reading keeping the ball like they do, it's frustrating for the home fans. They soon get on their team's back if they don't score. And Reading are nicking goals. And I think especially penalties-wise, I mean, I don't know how many penalties we've got last season, but we must be up to pretty much the same now.
Yeah, we've got four already. Yeah. Just three in the last three games, and that moves us nicely on to that Ipswich game. We won't spend too long on it because it was a fair while ago now. But a 2-1 win, a last-minute penalty sealing the deal after an early penalty put us into the lead. And then another penalty saw us draw level as well. This was a game, I was on holiday for this, so I only caught the second half. So I'm not the best place to describe this one. But Westy, you got to see it. How did Reading perform? Was it as good as you'd hoped?
It wasn't a great game of football. I think no one can sit here and say it was an amazing game to watch, because at times it was pretty dull. But they're grinding out results. I mean, I thought literally in the second half, I thought it probably should have won the game. They had some real clear-cut chances that they should have put in the net. But they didn't, and Reading kept going. And again, they've done it again against Barnsley. They're putting in a shift together, and that is all you can ask of any team.
Yeah, Johnny, Reading getting those penalty decisions, getting the goals. But the one problem that's unfortunately been a bit of a problem for that the whole season is goals from open play. And again, this continued into the game against Birmingham on Tuesday night. Just not able to find the net from open play. The only goal they have scored in proper open play, at least before the Barnsley game anyway, came away at Cardiff in the last minute. And I spoke with Charles about this on the Podcast Extra last Friday. Was this, or is this still a concern for you, that they're not quite crafting out those chances in open play?
I think it's got to be a concern. Although we have been missing John Swift for a couple of games, which I think even at this early stage takes away a big element of the way we play in terms of what he can do. But certainly it is a problem. And I think with Jan Kermagan, he's actually really impressed me to start this season. I've not been as big a fan of him as many before this season. But in terms of his link-up play, I think he's phenomenal, winning headers in the air, you know, playing the ball around to other players. But he just hasn't quite got that finisher's touch. And obviously in Yapstam's system, you're looking at goals from elsewhere across the pitch. And we've seen McCleary get into the box and have a couple of shots. And obviously he's on penalties now. Roy Behrens, I think, has impressed, but at the same time hasn't fully convinced, with his finishing product as well. So I think it's certainly something that's going to come with time once players get used to the system and know, okay, now I can gamble, now I can go forward, now I can perhaps leave my position for a while and, you know, try and create something and make something happen. But it's encouraging that, you know, like I said earlier, we're keeping games tight, we're keeping in games, and ultimately when you can nick a goal, whether it be a penalty, a free kick, or in open play, then you've always got a chance of winning the game and getting a result.
That's the thing, we're winning games without having many clear-cut opportunities in open play. So when we do start making opportunities, then we should be beating teams more convincingly.
But on that note, do you think Reading, I don't mean this sound harsh, but do you think Reading have been lucky this season? Because I can't think of how many games I've watched this season where I thought, God, the opposition have had more chances than us. They've had some great chances. You're talking about the Ipswich game. Tommy Smith.
Yeah, he should score.
How he misses that. 99 out of 100, he buries it.
Another set piece.
Yeah, and Barnsley, you know, had a load of shots on Saturday. Birmingham probably had the best of the efforts as well. Al Habsi was the busier keeper on Tuesday. Do you think there's an element of luck to this, or is this Reading making their own luck?
It's a good question. I would say in a Championship, most games could go either way. And even top teams in the Championship, even the Burnleys and that went up last year, there was a number of games I watched them play and I thought that could have quite easily gone to the other side. But the Championship's like that. It's always been like that. And I think if you just stay in games like they are at the moment, you can get results, and that's what's happened at the moment. Maybe that, like I say, maybe that luck will change. They will start putting the ball in there and we will lose games. But I just think that Reading have got more to give than they're giving at the moment.
John, are you happy to see Yapstam experimenting with the system of play? We got used to that 4-3-3 at the start of the campaign, but going into the Birmingham game, he switched it up. Now, depending on who you talk to, well, they'll describe it in different ways, although I think Will did very well at summing this up in a Tyler Stend article a few months ago, where he said basically the modern formation is dead. You know, players adapt to how the game situation, but nominally, let's describe this as it's a 5-3-2 or a 3-4-3, depending on whoever you talk to, but either way it's different. Are you happy to see him mixing it up, or would you have liked to just see him stick a bit more with what he'd known so far?
No, I think you've got to mix it up, because ultimately teams are going to figure you out eventually. And I think this is another thing that when you come on to how Reading fortunes are going to change in the next couple of months, is it that our formation is new to opponents, so they don't quite know how to deal with us? Equally, we're going to get used to our formation, but opponents are going to get used to our formation as well. So it's up to us to sort of keep innovating, if you like, and keep adding new new ways to play and new nuances to it, if you like. So I think you've always got to have these
plan B's, the plan C's.
Yeah, exactly. And ultimately, I think you've got a lot of decent defenders in there now, certainly in terms of that can play in a more defensive role. I think if you put Van den Berg there, you've got Moore, you've got Blackett, who's a bit of a centre-back as well. You've got Cooper there as well.
Got McShane, the captain.
Yep, McShane. So you've got a lot of, I think you've got a lot of defensive cover now, and most of them are comfortable playing the ball. So if you've got everyone in there who can pick a pass and make a pass, then, you know, why not put them in there and frustrate people even more?
Yeah, I was really impressed with Evans against Birmingham. I thought he played excellent. It's probably the best game he's played for Reading. And I think when he first came here, we all had our doubts if he was good enough to step up to the Championship. But I think, especially against Birmingham, who do look a very good side, I thought he played really well.
Yeah, and considering he was a very late replacement as well for Joey Vandenberg, who picked up a... Well, he seemed to aggravate the injury in the warm-up. It was a test to see if he could get through, and the call was not. And they kept that sort of system going for the trip to Barnsley. And as I mentioned, Barnsley were one of the informed teams in the division. They were banging home goals for fun. Again, talking with Charles, I had two of the best informed strikers in this league. And this wasn't an easy place to go, despite Reading's great record up at Oakwell over the years. But they go there. And Johnny, I mentioned this to you in our little pre-match video, John Swift, you picked him out on the very first episode of this season. And sure enough, he comes straight back into the side after missing a couple of games through injury, and bang, has a hand in both goals.
I think, well, I've mentioned this before, certainly. I went to the Swindon friendly, and after seeing him play 45 minutes, I confidently predicted on Twitter he would be our player of the season. And certainly, I mean, you can just see that he's involved in everything, isn't he? If you go back through just about every goal we've scored, he's either scored it, played the assist, or been involved in the move somehow. And you can just see that he's got that touch of class. You know, for the penalty incident, he obviously makes the run into the box beyond the strikers, gets a touch and gets caught by the keeper. And for the goal, I mean, you know, he has that confidence that he can run at a player and make a slight jink to the side and just... bang, that's it. He's not looking for the pass out wide. He's not looking for another run from a striker. He's got that confidence in his own ability that, it doesn't matter if it doesn't come off, but he's going to have a go. And, you know, what a finish. And if you can do that for the other players in the team, if you can do that for Kermigan, McCleary and Behrens as well, if they can feed off that confidence and say, hey, it doesn't matter if it goes over or if it goes in, just have a go. Have a go at make something happen. Then I think his effect in the team not only helps us in terms of a scoreline, but it helps everyone else in the team as well.
Where does John Swift rank for you so far, Westy, in the sort of ranks of recent Reading midfielders?
He looks a good player. I don't think anyone can deny that. And he's got a year or so in a championship under his belt, and he's come in and he's ready to go, whereas Evans was a little bit slower to get started. Swift looks like he's a good player. He looks like he could be one of our top midfielders we've ever had here, to be fair. I mean, you'd put him somewhere in a Sidwell sort of role where he can hit a ball, he can strike a ball, he gets up and down. He's confident on the ball as well. You can see he's been schooled properly, and there's no fear for him. If he's got the ball, you're safe and secure. Whereas sometimes when Daly Williams got a ball, you think, oh, just give it to someone else. You know what I mean? But yeah, I think he looks like a really, really good player.
He reminds me of a bit of a better version of Grant Brebner. Do you remember Grant Brebner?
Yeah, I remember Grant Brebner.
And he had that photo taken with Grant Brebner when I was a mascot.
Oh, there you go. But he had that one season under Burns where he was banged. He got about
scored lots of goals,
10, 12 goals, and he looked really good. And then he was sold straight away up to Hibs, and I still can't fathom that one. But anyway, yeah, he's had a fantastic start. And, you know, the very fact that we were struggling to create chances and goals while he was injured in those three games, he's come straight back in. Yeah. And sure enough, the goals have started to come again.
He looks good for 10 goals a season at least, doesn't he? Mm. I think Paul used to say quite a lot when we'd done a podcast before. He said you don't need to have a 20 goal a season striker as long as people are chipping in with 10s, 12s and 8s, you know?
There's the season Reading finished second in the first division. That season they had Nogan and Lovell, who got, I think, 12, 13 goals. But it was the goals from Scott Taylor, Michael Jilks, Simon Osborne.
And it looks like that's the way we're going to go this year. Yeah. I think Behrens is good for probably 5 to 10 goals at least. G-Mac looks like he's going to set the world on fire this year, scoring goals left, right and centre. So I think as long as people are going to chip in, and Swift looks like he's going to do it, I think having a striker that hits 20 goals a season is not that important.
The one thing I'd say about Swift, and this is something that Billy the Bee mentioned in his Brentford preview, he can go missing in big games. So we have to see that Swift can keep it up. They said when he came from Brentford, the one problem with him was his mentality. When things aren't going right, he perhaps shirks the issue a little bit. if we go 1-2-0 down to a team, say we're playing Derby in a couple of weeks, I think, if we start losing to them, is he going to take charge of things? Has he learned from that? Or is he going to, you know, go back into his shell? Is he essentially a player that can dominate a game, but when things are going badly, he can't do the same? We have to wait and see.
I think especially now with some of the older pros we've got in our side, I think you do well to get away with that. I couldn't imagine McShane and that saying, "Oh, sorry, you can have an off day." I'm sure he'd be soon in his ear and telling him what he expects of him. So I wouldn't worry too much about it.
And you talk about the leadership and the experience in the team. It's not necessarily an old team, but it does seem to have a lot more character to it. And how many times did we talk about on the podcast last year? We wanted to see guts from this team. We wanted to see passion from them. And they were put against the wall by Gareth McCleary. Now, I said he did well. He missed the penalty. He managed to bang home the rebound, so credit to him. I do wonder if he's going to stay on penalties, though. And Swift puts them 2-0 up. Absolutely cruising by all accounts. I was listening to it, happy as Larry. You know, I'd already typed up a bit in my flash report in 60 seconds that we'd picked up a win, so didn't manage to curse us this time. But anyway, everything was all going nicely. And then a moment of madness. Danny Williams goes down under a hard tackle. Conor Hura and the Barnsley skipper gets right in his face. He bends over and McCleary just sees red. Storms over and pushes Hura Hayne to the ground. Straight red card. First of all, was it a red card, Westy?
I think that it's... Again, I thought that the Barnsley player had left his arm in anyway. I thought it was a real crunching tackle. And he had a high arm. I thought he caught him in the face. I thought he was lucky to stay on himself. But we all know if you're going to go up to a player and push him over, and let's face it, they go down quite easily nowadays, you're going to get sent off. So maybe if we were at home, the referee would have given me a yellow card. But away from home, it's an easy decision for a referee.
I think that was my favourite bit about it. You got a 6'4" centre back going, just standing over Danny Williams as if to say, "Come on, mate, get up." Gets a slight little push, and he's on the ground rolling around. Yeah. I mean, it's the gamesmanship, and when a situation happens like that, you've got to expect a red card.
Yeah, McCleary's come out and apologised afterwards. The unfortunate thing is he's going to miss 3 games for violent conduct. Fortunately, I suppose one of those is a League Cup game he might have been rested for anyway, but still, missing a game against the league leaders in Huddersfield isn't ideal, especially because, as we mentioned, he's been in such fantastic form.
Yeah.
And it's just silly. It's just like, it was like a... I hope it doesn't turn out like Orlando Saar last season, where Saar had just started to really get into that form, got that red card, and just sort of never really got it back. I don't think McCleary's that type of character, and he's got certainly more pedigree and experience in this league, but it's still difficult. And also, from a personal point of view, for McCleary, give someone else a chance.
Yeah, well, Harry, again, hopefully we might get his chance now, and I think he's good for a few goals this season as well. He looks, when he comes on, he does look like a good player. So yeah, give him his opportunity. I don't think it'd be a massive miss as long as they swap like for like, really. But I think over the last couple of seasons we've complained about players not showing any interest or any passion, and I think if one of your mates gets put on the floor and you push a big 6'4" centre back over, that shows you're not frightened anymore.
It's better than two of your own players arguing with each other. Yeah. Shane and Williams
slogging it out in a penalty box. Yeah.
But I mean, the good thing is the inspector's written an opinion piece on the thetylersen.com, which you can read right now, saying this could be the best thing to happen to Reading, because again, they had to gut it out for 60 minutes to get this result. And the great thing about Reading's possession style of football is they're used to keeping the ball.
Yeah.
They're not a team that's hitting the wings constantly and pumping the ball long, and so it's just going to be a constant having the ball coming back at you. They know how to keep the ball. They lost possession for the first time in the overall game. Sorry, they lost possession for the first time this season. 55-45. Well, I think having 45% of the ball when you've only got 10 men and you're defending a lead is a damn good effort.
Yeah, I think a lot of people have said this. All the outlets I've read anyway have all said last year they would have lost that game, and there wasn't a doubt in my mind that last year they would have got beat from a 2-0 up. No,
I don't think it would have been 2-0 up last year.
They wouldn't have been.
The game that sprang immediately to my mind was Fulham. Fulham away, 2-0 up, cruising.
Capitulated.
And they just completely bottled it. So going back to the original question of whether they're lucky or whether they're good, I'll just bring in some of these stats from who scored anyway. They're good for keeping stats and bits and pieces. I encourage you to go and check them out. But anyway, in their rankings, Reading are top for possession in the Championship with an average of 59.2%. They're second in pass completion for 81.8%. Gets a little bit hairy when you get into the attacking categories, though. Shots per game were only 8th with an average of 12.1. And shots on target were down in 15th with 3.6 per game. In contrast, Barnsley were top of that with 5.9.
So what you're saying is we're clinical in front of Golden.
Exactly. In dribbles, we're 13th. And in defence, this is more of a byproduct of the fact we keep the ball. If tackles were 22nd, we're averaging 13.5 per game. And interceptions, 21st, 12 per game. But I think those, again, are more to do with the fact that if the opposition haven't got the ball, you don't need to nick it back.
No, and I often say there's only one stat that counts, and that's the goals.
And overall, they rank our defence as the 17th best and our attack as the 9th best. So there you go.
Yeah.
But just looking at that, though, I mean, is it fair? I mean, that's sort of, you take the average of that, it's a mid-table side. Do you think we're playing like a mid-table side or are we playing better than that?
I think we're playing like a mid-table side, if I'm honest. The results have been good, like you say, but did we deserve to beat Birmingham? Probably not. Did we? Well, we didn't. Did we deserve to beat Ipswich? Probably not. I thought a draw was probably a fair result. And in terms of Barnsley, you know, they had a hell of a lot of chances and probably on another day could have or would have turned it round. So whether it's a case of us being lucky to start the season and these things even themselves out over the course of a season, as we always say, or whether it is just we're grinding results out and things are only going to get better, we'll have to wait and see. But, you know, to be at this early stage talking about victories is
nice.
It's pleasant. Yeah.
So this a similar stage last season. I remember us getting around on this podcast. It was a little bit later. It was into October after. It was around that Fulham game, just before it sort of set. And we were all getting on the Reading are going to win the league bandwagon. I think all of us had money on it with the bookies.
Mm. I didn't.
Oh, well, you're lucky.
You're sensible.
Yeah, you're sensible. Hashtag gamble.
No, I just haven't got any money.
Because it's already gone on the last five seasons, hasn't it?
If you did have a fiver in your pocket, Westy, are you going to be putting any money on Reading for a promotion push? Or are you sort of in the same mentality you were at the start of the year?
I often think whenever you watch a championship season, there is no team that ever sits there and you think they're really top level good. You know, they're really brilliant. They're going to walk this league. You never think it. And again, this season's no different, I don't think. I think with the championship, every time, you can never tell who's going to be in the top six or ten. And I think, looking at Reading, you're saying, have they been lucky? I think you normally would say, sort of good teams grind out results. And I think at the moment, they are grinding out results. Have we got everything we need to be in the top two? Nowhere near. Nowhere near. But could we finish sixth? Yeah, I don't see why we couldn't. I don't see anyone else as that good that we need to be worried about. And I thought Birmingham were a decent side, but they weren't that frightening, were they?
Johnny?
I wouldn't put money on us being promoted, no. But at the start of the season, you said, would we be more likely to be promoted or relegated? At the start of the season, I said relegated. Now, after seeing what Yapstam has done, after seeing the squad, after having some of those doubts allayed, if you like, I'm now more confident in terms of promotion more likely than relegation. But I still think neither.
Yeah, all I'm going to say is I don't think a team with that strike force is going to finish in the top six, because I know what you were saying earlier, Wesley, about needing a 20 goal a season scorer, but they barely have a 10 goal a season scorer at the moment, and Kermigan doesn't look like he's going to get 10 this season. No. And I think unless they get, or you know, someone like a Samuel emerges, or Rackles when he comes back from injury, or Mate, unless somebody really steps up and finds some competition, I just don't see us getting the volume of goals we're going to need to nick games, because you can't rely on set pieces all the time. I said four penalties in the first eight games of the season is not sustainable.
No, I agree with you there. That's what I said. They really certainly haven't got everything they need to be a promotion side, but it wouldn't surprise me if they did nick in the playoffs.
Top 10 for me still, but more likely to be 10 than 1.
No, agreed. I'd fully agreed on that one.
Well, there we go. Nice.
We could do the typical Reading thing of, oh, are we going to make the playoffs on the final day? No, we're not.
I would settle for just having something to play for going into April, May.
It's just nice to not see him at the bottom of the table. Yeah. Let's face it.
Yeah, well, indeed. Well, I said, watch this space, because as mentioned, Reading was second around this point of the season last year, so a lot can change in a hurry.
And it was a good job they were, because they fell from grace pretty quickly.
So let nobody get carried away, but at the same point, don't be too miserable about it. Obviously, you've got to enjoy these wins while they come. So
And don't boo them from keeping the ball, please.
Yeah, that's a whole other can of words. We can get onto that one a little bit later, but in the meantime, we've got a few news bites to get through, which you can hear after this.
Reading News Bites on the Tarlhurst End podcast.
So the transfer window has slammed shut, so not a lot to talk about on that front, but there is a couple of little bits of news going around the club this week. First of all, we'll start with news on Royal Elm Park. That is the proposed development around the Modesty Stadium, if you are not aware. Now, planning has gone back in to the council and it will be heard and debated on towards the end of the year. The plans that have gone to them call for 630 homes, a conference centre with a 5,000 seat capacity, a 250 bed hotel, an ice rink, cafe and a restaurant. And economists are projecting it could create 1,000 new jobs and boost the Thames Valley economy by 50%. So that all sounds really nice, Johnny, but now that we're a good year or so into this whole Royal Elm Park project, yeah, I remember you wrote the original piece up on the Tarlhurst End. Anything you've seen since then, done anything to change your views on it?
No, not really. I mean, like you said, I thought it went in a year ago. So what is this? Just they've done it again.
Yeah, it's just a revised sort of latest thing. Obviously, they had a few questions to answer on environmental concerns. And,
oh, yeah. And traffic concerns.
Indeed, indeed.
As a commuter myself, I don't think this will particularly be my favourite project to come home to in the evenings.
No.
But no, I mean, you know, if it's going to boost the economy by 50%, then fantastic. If we're going to get some gigs around here, then... I remember the Chili's playing at the Mad Stab back in, what was it, 2003?
That is way
4?
Back.
Yeah, ages ago.
Elton John was there once as well, wasn't it? That was about 12 years ago, wasn't it? 15 years ago?
I used to do the 210 FM Summer Excess there as well. So, you know, it's going to be an all round the year project.
I often ask that, how many hotels do you need in Reading? I mean, how many people actually come in here?
You would be surprised, Alan West. You would be surprised. As Wim Senior is in the hoteliers industry. It is a really popular location because if you think about where Reading is, it's near London, it's near Heathrow, it's got links everywhere.
Go to London and Heathrow.
The amount of business that's done and the amount of business that's getting done around Reading now is growing. And I think this is part of the idea behind it all, is that facilities like this just attract more business in, so you need more hotels. I mean, if you've got a 5,000-seat conference centre, you're going to need 250 hotel rooms.
Yeah, I guess so. But there seem to be a lot of hotels in that area as we speak.
Yeah.
I'm not a multi-millionaire. There's probably a reason for that. So what do
think
I know?
Of all the fun we can have at the ice rink before games.
Strike up a rival with the Bracknell Bees.
Can we get our own team? That'd be good, though.
The Reading Royals. But again, I mean, the owners have stated their intention that this whole thing is, you know, they admit that it's partly to recoup some of the money they invested, but also to hopefully give a new source of revenue to the club.
It's a huge amount of money you can make from that area, let's face it. If you've got 600 and some odd houses, prices in Reading are going through the roof, so someone's going to make a lot of money from that.
Also, I think if they do put in a few bars as well, that would be appreciated by the Reading fans, because I see the Royal Rendezvous now around the back of the East Stand seems to be developing year on year now, doesn't it? And it's getting a lot bigger, and they're thinking a lot more about that for the fan day experience, which is something that they've got to be given credit for, I think, because...
You say that, but I swear food vans have gone from around there. I swear there's less than they used to
be. But there's more booze vans.
It depends what you're looking for, doesn't it, Wim? I mean, obviously, me and John are looking for the booze vans, so you're looking for the food.
Obviously. Unprofessional joke of a waistline that I've got and all that jazz.
That is. For the fan experience, it's good. But the only thing that concerns me about it is it's all outside. So when November comes, I can't imagine people sitting at the park benches having a cold beer in a plastic glass.
They've got a DJ there now as well, haven't they?
Yeah, he's really good as well.
He's
going
to be pumping out the tunes on a Tuesday
him
night.
And DJ Mega Party can have some sort of rap battle.
Do you know what? It's almost worth just going for that sometimes.
Wow.
Just staying outside.
Don't buy a ticket.
Here I was mourning the loss of the TVs outside the stadium, and it seems I'm in the wrong place. I need to be hanging out next to this DJ.
Pretty much.
No? Cool. No. Chief Executive Nigel Howell said, recent major developments put Reading into a different league, and this scheme will add further scale that will be essential to the region's future economic growth ambitions. The stature and quality of businesses locating in Reading is phenomenal, but they are having to look elsewhere to hold major events. Royal Elm Park will be a fantastic new facility for Reading, and it's been funded entirely privately, which represents a major benefit for the taxpayer.
The big question is, where am I going to park my car?
They are putting in a multi-story as part of the developments, and they're promising to improve public transport. But there is another development going on around just around the corner in the old HP site as well. Yeah. So days, and if you throw in the news that the M4 is going to be converted to a smart motorway starting in March.
Really?
Yeah.
What's going to be smart about it?
It's going to have an extra lane and cause 5 years of roadworks.
All that happens is you drive on the hard shoulder. That's all that's smart about it. It's got a sign saying you can drive on the hard shoulder.
You get to pay with that with 5 years of roadworks, Johnny. I think that's a good trade-off.
Yeah, I think that's a good trade-off. And there's still, if there's a crash, to shut the whole motorway anyway. So it doesn't make a difference, does it, really?
Anyway, now that this conversation has got into motorways and public transport, it's probably time to move on. No pub chat this week. We sort of exhausted quite a few topics on the 100th episode of the show. We've had quite a big recap as well. And we've got lots of topics to get to in the mailbag. So we'll move on to that now.
The Tarlhurst End Podcast. By Reading fans, for Reading fans.
Right, again, a big thank you to everyone who has submitted feedback via all the usual channels at the Tireless Den on Twitter, thetirelessden@gmail.com for emails, and also for those of you who've given us a like on facebook.com/Tireless Den. We just passed 1,000 follower mark, so thank you very much to each of you who get your news there. Right, we'll start with Ollie Reed, who's emailed us in. He says, "Hi guys, enjoy listening to the show for the last couple of years. Just a tactical observation from yesterday's game. Although it was reported as a 5-3-2/3-5-2, it very much seemed to me like a 3-4-3, as McLeary and Beerens were right up alongside Jan. Anyway, the benefit of this system with an extra centre-back made it much easier to play out from the back, which got us up the field quicker, resulting in more attempts on goal. Notably, Al-Habsi was less involved, as the back three didn't need to include him when passing out in triangles. Great performance, very much reminded me of Bristol City away last season, torn them to shreds in the first half." That's a good comparison, actually, because they got on top of Bristol City really early, didn't they? McLeary scored a long ranger that day. I can't remember who got the other goal. Probably someone like Saar or Vidra. Someone's screaming into their radio anyway.
I certainly remember McCurry's goal. That was a banger.
Yeah, what do you think about that in terms of, again, gets the ball at the field quicker by using that third centre back rather than the keeper?
I think it's a good tactic. I mean, taking the pressure off Ali Al-Habsi, who, well, to be fair to him, I mean, we always say he got a mistake in him, but he hasn't really made a mistake for a while, and obviously won our player of the season last year. But if you know, he's not been brought up in a style where he's comfortable having the ball, whereas every single youth player that comes through the system now, there are no players that are just taught get rid. Every player is taught look up before you get it, pick your pass. And like I was saying, you've got players like Joey Vandenberg, George Evans, who, whilst they're not natural centre-backs, they can do a defensive job, or they're defensively minded, and they're very comfortable on the ball. In terms of keeping it and picking out a pass. So when you've got that sort of triangle, if you like, and you've got Liam Moore there, Paul McShane there, Tyler Blackett, if you like, less so Jake Cooper, but they're all comfortable on the ball as well. So you've got that good core in there who can keep the ball and then try and distribute it elsewhere. So in terms of our possession game and creating chances and dragging the opposition out of position, it's certainly a good option to have.
Yeah, I can only agree with that. Like I say, it always worries me when you're asking a goalkeeper like Al-Habsi to play a lot of football. Like I say, he has got a mistake in him. He's been brilliant, to be fair. He's kept us in games. But his game is not to be a footballer, it's to be a goalkeeper. And I know that sort of crosses over now, and has done over the last couple of years. But when you're asking a goalkeeper to play football, I'd rather see Evans back there playing it. I'd rather see the players have the ball and play it like that. It's much better.
And we've seen through at the back work for Reading, famously, that 94-95 team.
Yeah.
Going to Wembley, you had McPherson, Dubček and Ady Williams in there. And they all complemented each other really well. And it was the linchpin was Dubček.
But of course, but you've also what you could do, it release your fullbacks, and you've got players like Gunther and Abita who are better going forward anyway. And they do make the pitch wider and make more room for everybody.
Just on Abita while you bring it up, because I didn't get a chance to get around to it in the recap. Abita or Blackett, who takes that position for you at the moment? We saw Abita coming against Birmingham and then get dropped with Blackett coming in for the trip to Barnsley.
It's going to be horses for courses. I think he sees Blackett as a better defensive option and Abita as a better attacking option. And I don't think you can really argue with that.
Yeah, like you said, Abita put the cross in for Kermigant away at Cardiff, didn't he? He brought him on as a sub. And he's done that a couple of times, brought Abita on, I think, you know, as a left-back sub, essentially. Not only if you're chasing a game, but if it's a 0-0 or a 1-1 and you're thinking, okay, we're on top here, add a bit of dynamism back there, push them back even more. So it gives you that options. If it's a game you're expecting to put a lot of crosses in, probably go for Abita. If you need a bit more presence at the back, then you can go for Blackett.
Yeah.
Yeah, Laura Rule says, Barnsley's player's reaction was terrible. Judge think what he said to Danny Williams. He was out of control. The ref was weak. Great win, obviously referencing the red card incident. And then we've got quite a few questions on John Swift, Gareth McLeary and Callum Harriott. So I'll rattle through them anyway. Starting with Ollie, our assistant editor here, who was on the last episode of the show. He says, odd that Harriott hasn't been given much of a chance yet, even as a sub. Will be good to see him with Gareth McLeary out. Jack Killick asked, and he did ask this before the Barnsley game, he says, I was wondering what your thoughts were on Swift being subbed on for McLeary and then playing on the wing. Surely it makes a lot more sense to sub on Harriott, who's been in good form but hasn't got a chance recently. And finally, Daniel Harrington says, can we keep Swift? And one more on the Swift front from Raw Hoops. Should we be worried that it seems the team's potency focuses around Swift's availability? So all sort of roughly on the same theme. On the Callum Harriott front, does Callum Harriott deserve more of a chance? He's not really been getting that many minutes in the league.
I must admit, I thought he'd been subbed on when McLeary went off the other day, a like for like, especially when Swift did go out on the wing. That seemed a bit strange. But I think his chance will come. It's going to come soon by the looks of things. and I don't think he'll let him down because he looks like a good player. A lot to learn, but he looks like a good player. And I think once he gets his opportunity, I think Bearen's going to have to up his game a little bit because I can't see him leaving out G-Mac too often.
Did Swift impress you in his little cameo on the wings?
Well, I think obviously he's not a natural winger, but in terms of what he can do in terms of keeping the ball and certainly his crossing delivery, I mean, he's got probably the best technique at the club at the moment. So he is that versatile sort of player where you can probably put him just about anywhere in the midfield, probably not as a central forward, but certainly as an inside forward or as a winger, if you like, and he'd probably do a job there just because his technique is so high.
He's just a good footballer.
Yeah, exactly, and he's got a good engine. I don't think he's certainly not the quickest player, but then you look at a winger like Glenn Little, who certainly wasn't the quickest, but he had that trickery and that technique, which was what helped him to succeed. And ultimately, I think John Swift is just... he's just one of the best players at the club. Wherever you put him, he's going to put in a shift. And if you can put your 11 best players on the pitch, then that's probably what Yapstan was trying to do.
What about Hoops' point, though? He said, should we be worried that the team's putting too focuses around Swift? Westy, are you worried about the team without Swift in it?
No, not overly. I think it's probably, for midfield options, it's probably the best we've had for some time. I mean, they've got probably five players now that if any one of them plays, you don't particularly worry. Even when little Quinny comes in, you know what you're going to get out of him. Yeah, I think probably options-wise, we've got the best. Am I worried about it? No, because I think that other players will put the ball in net. But obviously, Swift's such a good player that you're going to miss him if he's not there.
Yeah, and a couple of final questions, both coming from Chris Hartley. He says, do we finally have a manager in Yapstam that is tactically astute? Saturday's win, post-red card, showed that for me. Agree? Disagree?
I don't think you can argue with it. Like we've said, he seems to be quite fluid in what he does. He will change things without worrying too much about it. And I think more than anything, with a player as he was and the players we've got, they've got so much respect for him that they will run for a wall. And I think that's all you can ask.
I think the real test is going to happen, and it will happen, is if we lose three or four games in a row. Yeah. Not only for the fans. I mean, you know, like you're saying, it's all good and well cheering it when we're just passing it around when we're winning. If we're losing and we're doing this slow build-up from the back, because we did it last year under McDermott and Clark as well, I can tell you the fans aren't going to react the way they're reacting at the moment. Exactly, but also how Stan reacts, whether he changes things, whether he panics or keeps things going the same way. And so far, you've got to give two thumbs up to Yapstan, but he hasn't really had a big test yet.
I mean, we've had managers come here before and try and convert to that system, Brendan Rodgers being one, but he certainly didn't have the players that Yapstan's got at his disposal at the time. And I think it probably as an experiment changing the way we've played for years, I think... early days, it's looking pretty good, and I think it'll only get better.
Yeah, and Chris's other question is, who's our most consistent player this season?
I think everyone's been relatively consistent. Can't look at anyone and say, I don't know. I think with Bearens, I think, again, he's got a trick in him. I don't think he's had a sustained 90 minutes before actually he's been really good. But most wingers are like that. You never see a winger play 90 minutes and be really good. But other than that, I think everyone's putting in a shift. I don't think anyone's been... off the pace.
Danny Williams has been a bit up and down.
Danny Williams, yeah, maybe. I didn't think he had a particularly good game last home game against Birmingham. He got caught a few times. He looked like he'd been on the razzmatazz for a while. Early days, especially. He did struggle a little bit, but in general, I think you know what you get from him as well.
So I think if you're going to highlight one player for consistency, it's the player who's probably put in a 6 out of 10 the whole time he's been here, Chris Gunter.
Quinny,
not in terms of a bad 6 out of 10.
So Quinny comes and gets 6 out of 10, 7 out of 10, and he doesn't ever pull up trees, but no one's been off the pace, I don't think. Everyone's looks good.
Yeah, and it's important to note, friends of Danny Williams, that we are not accusing him of being out on the razz.
Of course not. It's just that's the way you play. Like, yeah.
Whether you are or not, we don't know. We'll leave that one there. Inconsistent, like you said, I think everyone's been fairly consistent. Yeah. But
you've got that competition in the squad now, which means that everyone is always pushing each other as well.
I think the only... Again, don't like to be negative, but the only thing I would say is I don't think many players have had barnstorming games.
This is what I was saying earlier, that you can't think back to... Well, perhaps first game of the season aside against Preston, but that was as much Preston being awful as us being good. I don't think... You know, I mean, we've said it for so many years, you want Reading to go out and batter a team 4-0. And it hasn't happened yet, and it hasn't looked like happening
Saturday
yet.
Could have been that day, but we'll never know because of the red card. But otherwise, you know, we do our player ratings on the Tyler Centre, and we try and keep them consistent. And people every week saying, why isn't this guy getting an 8? Why isn't this guy getting a 9? We're trying to be selective and really selective, and you've got to really work hard to get there. And I'm struggling to think of anyone who's really put in that 8 or 9 out of 10.
No, and I totally agree with you. I think they have been playing at 6 and 7s, which again goes to show that there's more to come.
Yeah, well, fingers crossed. Right, again, thank you very much to everyone who has got in touch in the mailbag. As always, you can get in touch with us at The Tireless End on Twitter, thetirelessend@gmail.com, and on facebook.com/thetirelessend. Just a few loose ends to tidy up, including a couple of games to preview in Any Other Business.
The Tirelessend End Podcast. Any Other Business.
Right, welcome back to Any Other Business. And we've got sad news to report. Alan West has had a bust up with Johnny in the interval. They've come to blows. And like Joey Barton at Rangers, we've had to ban him for 3 weeks from the Tirelessend End training ground. You know, he will put out a statement saying he was off to pick up his kids, but we all know the truth.
He's going to put out a rogue tweet and delete it. That's the modern footballer style.
But Westy's had to leave us as he has got family commitments. So it's just me and Johnny now for the last part of the show. So I can hear you clicking off in your droves. But we have got two games to get to. We're just before... Actually, no, I'll save it for the very end of the show. Right, Brighton, EFL Cup, Johnny. Reading seem to get through to the stage quite a lot. And they seem to have a bit of a psychological barrier when it hits to round 3 and 4. It's not exactly a plum draw away at Brighton, a team. They're 7th in the Championship. Very similar season to us so far. Although they have looked great when they've been great and a bit more terrible when they've been bad. They've got through to this round by beating Colchester at home 4-0 and smashing Oxford away 4-2. The interesting thing from looking at their team is the fact that they don't take this cup very seriously. Or they haven't so far, anyway. You run through the lineup, and other than a certain Oliver Norwood...
Ringers like Oliver Norwood.
Yeah, they their last cup team had no players that started Saturday's win at Burton. So a full raft of changes every week. Now, Chris Hughton could obviously change that up for this round. But going into this from a Reading point of view, Johnny, do you do what Yapstam did for the Milton Keynes Dons game and completely change things up? Or do you do what he did against Plymouth and play a bit more of a stronger team?
I think it'll be a bit of a mix, to be honest. And I think he might bring out the 3-5-2 or 3-4-3 formation, whatever it is, give a few more players a little bit of a chance. Because as I said, I think it's quite a big squad now in terms of churn at the bottom, if you like. Where you almost know sort of 8 or 9 players on the first choice team sheet, if you like, but then you've got probably 10, 12, 14 players who could all make the bench or could all start on any given day. So he'll have a task keeping those players happy. So I think we will see quite a few changes, to be honest. Callum Harriott will probably get a game to get him used to the team. I think you might see Sandro Visa or Visa involved. Certainly for a significant amount of time. Maybe Anzi Yakula, we'll see a little bit of him as well.
I think Jan Koeming has got to get a rest. I don't think Joseph Mendes has done absolutely nothing.
No.
Just to impress me so far. But with Yakimete out, with that combo injury we talked about in the podcast extra, and Dennis Rackle's out to the new year, there's just precious little. I'm desperate to see Dom Samuel.
Yeah.
Just to see what he can do in a... albeit not a proper senior lineup, but he needs to show something. But other than that, I think you're right. I think you've got to give people like Paul McShane a rest. Obviously, you would see someone like a Jordan Abee to come back in because he didn't play last week. Mm. And someone to deputise for Chris Gunter, although he does seem to be a marathon man, the Duracell Bunny. He just goes on and on and on.
65 games last year,
He is ridiculous. One of the finest athletes I think we've ever had at a football club. No matter what you want to say about his technical skills and... probably a good job handbags isn't here.
I mean, it's the sort of thing where I don't know how many... Well, it's normally years after a certain amount of years you get a testimonial. But if you're Chris Gunter and you're doing it after a certain amount of games, you probably get it after about 3 years because he just keeps going, doesn't he?
Well, I believe he's the club's appearance leader.
Yeah,
certainly. Still left at the football club. So certainly doing well. And nice to see him stay after that window slam shut as well. So how do you see this one going then? The bookies have this... Brighton are 8-15 on to qualify. Reading 13-8, so pretty much a 2-1 on or a 2-1 against affair. Bookies certainly see Brighton getting through. Do you agree with them?
I think it's pretty much a coin toss, isn't it? I'd go for a. I know it doesn't count towards the prediction league, but I'll go for a 2-2 draw and Reading winning on penalties.
So then getting MK Dons.
Yeah, and then getting another crappy random championship draw.
Yeah, and that is does seem to be the way in this competition. That or Arsenal, who ruin dreams on a week, on a yearly basis. After that, it's back to more serious matters. It is back to the Championship, and there can't be much bigger games. It's Huddersfield at home. Now, they are top of the Championship. They've won 6, drawn 1, and lost 1 this season. Their goal difference, though, is only plus 5. They've not been the Newcastle route of ridiculous flair followed by crushing defeats. They've been a bit like Reading, really. They win games by the odd goal. They've not scored 3 in a game, but they've also not conceded more than 1 goal this season. So they are using those fine margins and coming out on top. They're really doing well under Wagner, their coach, the former number 2, to Mr. Jurgen Klopp. His name had completely forgotten me. I want to say Jurgen Love then. But anyway, they have done well. He's really taken them on this season. They are top of the Championship. How much should Reading fear this side on Saturday?
I mean, it's difficult to say. I think with a team like Barnsley, it's slightly different to that situation. Obviously, Barnsley were flying, but we've seen in recent years a lot of teams that come up from League One perform really well in the Championship next year because they've got that confidence, they've got that swagger about them, and they just come in and hit the ground running. Huddersfield have been in the Championship for certainly a few years now, a little bit more established. They've got a very good team. I think the signing of Aaron Moy, I think he came from Melbourne to Manchester City and now he's on loan. I mean, he's a class act. I think he's certainly really shaping their team. Naki Wells, we all know.
Oh God.
Always seems to score well.
Yeah.
I'd love some actual stats on that. I think these players always seem
research,
to score.
Yeah. You know, we don't do that here.
I mean, these players always seem to score against us. I'm not sure they do, but he's a class player.
He certainly got a goal in the 3-0 reverse in one of the worst moments of last season. Yeah. We went up there in the league and got thumped.
Yeah.
I think he scored in the cup game there as well, the 2-2 draw. Mm. And I certainly remember him scoring goals at the Medeski before. So no familiar to find at the back of the net.
I'm surprised to see that we're favourites for the game.
Yeah, that did surprise me, especially because I remember the other week when we played Brighton, we weren't favourites at home. Mm. So the bookies have certainly got behind us in the Yapstam. Reading 6-4, the draw's 2-1, and Huddersfield 21-10. So just about 2-1 as well. So Reading marginal favourites, it's not by a lot. But again, you've got a random tenner in your pocket. Where's your money?
I will not be suckered in to back in Reading this year. I want to believe, but they've hurt me so many times in the past that I can't. I'm
firmly on the draw personally.
Yeah, I think at this stage, I don't know. I just think, like I said, I think we've been a little bit lucky in some of our games so far this year in terms of results. I don't think we've massively outplayed a team, and when you're playing a team that's flying like Huddersfield, and I think just about established in this division, it'll be a tough test. So I'd probably go for a Reading defeat.
Are you saying that a game in the Championship is going to be a tough test, Johnny?
No, never. I thought we'd
steamroller. Not heard that one before.
Steamroller them.
No. Okay, so what are you saying for prediction league purposes?
I'll go for a 2-1 win to Huddersfield, which seems to be going quite well for actually Reading winning so far this season. So maybe I'll keep it up.
Yeah, doing one
taking
for
hits for the team.
I'm going to say this is going to end in a 1-1 draw.
Nice. Keeping with your stats of the scoring and conceding.
Yeah, and Westy, who has left us, has also gone for a 1-1 draw. Just a very quick update in the Prediction League standings. It hasn't changed from Friday's podcast extra in that I am top. I think Charles is a point off. Then it is Dave and Westy. And Johnny, unfortunately, you bring up the rear.
Jose Mourinho style. Win the league 1 year, relegation the next.
Absolutely. Sorry, I do a disservice to Charles. We're level at the top, me and Charles. So there you go. So hopefully, Johnny, you can claw things back. I mean, Charles is on that hot streak, so you can be too.
But anyway, for a defeat.
Yeah, well, and I will wrap up this show. I teased it at the very start of the show. My reason this week to dislike Hal Robson-Kanu. Did you see the squad number that Hal Robson-Kanu has taken for new club West Brom?
Reveal all.
Hal Robson-Kanu has taken the squad number 4. Call me old-fashioned, but I can just about tolerate a centre midfield taking number 4.
Yeah.
But Hal Robson-Kanu, who has been nowhere near a back 4 in his entire life, taking the number of a centre-back, it's just not right, Johnny. It's just not right.
No, absolutely.
It just sums him up as a footballer. It's just not right.
No. I yeah. What a shambles of a man. I mean, it's the same reason we didn't sign Asamoah Gyan, I hope. Number three. Yeah. Striker, number three.
God, can you imagine?
I think we brought this up a couple of weeks ago, didn't we?
Yeah.
Sidwell took number nine when he went to Chelsea. No. No. I'm the same
number
as
four.
You. Squad numbers. You've got to play for your squad number that represents your position.
Absolutely. So, yeah, good riddance, Hal. That's your shirt-wearing number attitude number. To be fair, he was stealing a living wearing number nine for Reading. Considering the amount of goals, I think he got less than nine wearing that shirt.
Mm.
So certainly in the league. Anyway, I will let it go. I'm just poking a bit of fun at him. Don't even get the laughter train started on how long it's been since Nick Blackman scored a goal.
That's a fun little. We should make a website for that.
Yeah, has Nick Blackman scored yet?
No.
Yeah. Anyway, that just about wraps up this show. That is 101 in the books, and we continue on this podcast odyssey. Hopefully. On Friday for the podcast extra with myself and Charles. Just a quick note before we go as well. Big thank you to everyone who continues to support us via the crowdfunding campaign. A lot of you have helped fund numerous upgrades that hopefully has made a difference to your listening experience to the show. We're still very keen to bring in a little bit more money. We're always constantly buying new things, little bits and pieces to improve the experience and things for the website staff as well, subscriptions and bits and pieces as well. So if you do want to give a little back to the show, I said we do this all for free. If you do want to stick a couple of quid in the tip jar, as it were, please click on the link that accompanies this episode. You don't have to give very much. I think the lowest is about $2 a month, which I think at last count worked out at about £1.25.
Brexit, eh?
Indeed. But it all adds up. And I said, it does mean a lot. I said, we do this all for free because we love the football club, but it does help that you get that little bit of money in through the door and it allows you to buy nice things like microphones and bits and pieces like that. So, yeah, you know, we can buy a replacement for Westy now that Westy's gone. Have you ever seen the film Airplane?
Many, many years ago.
When they have the crash and when the plane's going down, they have the autopilot. It's like a blow-up doll. We need to have one of those for the podcast. And I don't know how much it's going to cost, so keep your pledges coming
just
in.
Just a blow-up doll without a voice or...
No, it'll be a podcast. Okay. It'll be a podcast blow-up doll.
Okay, just like a Siri or something.
It'll be full of hot air.
Okay.
Yeah, see what I've done there?
Yeah.
Anyway, you can tell tell we're running low on the fuel tank. We will wrap the show up there. As I said, I will be back with Charles on Friday. Johnny, thank you very much for joining me. The main edition of this show will probably be back next Monday as well, barring any late hitches. So stay tuned for the Twitter for that. But in the meantime, as always, come on, you are. It's funny how the crowds always leave a trail. Funny how the crowds always leave a trail. It's funny how they always leave a trail. You smile, you smile. Funny how the crowds always leave a trail. You know where the team is on your trail. Funny how the crowds always leave a trail. You smile, you smile. The crowds
social with the boys.
Find them on Twitter
at the Tarlhurst End
and facebook.com/thetarlhurstend.